With me now, Leon Lowe from the Freedom Foundation. Thank you very much for your time. And Leon, I want to start with the budget and the non-budget, rather. I know that's taking us a bit back in time, but the reality is we have the new budget tabled for the 12th of March. What do you think is going to happen at the 12th of March? Do you think that we will see the VAT, potential VAT increase of 2% being eliminated, obliterated from the minister's speech?
We probably will. I think that's too contentious and has become a very unpopular issue for the ANC's constituency. So we'll probably see it go. But what will we see? Will we see a reduction in spending? He said he was taken by surprise that there was an above-inflation increase in civil servant salaries on the preceding day. I thought that was very odd. But anyway, we will probably see VAT go, but we probably won't see expenses go. And the terrible danger is that we'll have even more national debt, that'll go up. And it's already at loony levels for South Africa's economy. And we will not see any of the reforms that bring about growth. Year after year after year, budget after budget, SONA after SONA, we get promised that we'll have pro-growth, pro-investment policies. We will have deficits cut year after year after year, and we will have red tape removed and an investment-friendly economy. And whilst the budget is being presented, or the SONA is being presented in Parliament, there's a parliamentary program full of stuff that does exactly the opposite: increases spending, increases red tape, makes us less investor friendly, and we are not likely to see anything in this budget that is cause for optimism. Maybe somewhat less of an increase in spending. The increase we're seeing so far would take us to what is proposed, would take us to 3 days later in the Tax Freedom Day of the year. That is the day for which everyone works for the government until the 15th of May this year. And then after that, our taxes are paid and we can start working for ourselves. But we're likely to see South Africa's economy deteriorate. We're likely to see none of the growth. Every year, it's quite amazing that the ministers never get tired of this. They say, we had lower growth than expected. It was less than 1%. But next year and the year after, we expect 2 or 3% with no change in policy. I mean, obviously, if you do the same thing, you have the same result. So we're not likely to see a change in policy. We are not likely to see anything that will attract investors or produce growth or create jobs. And we are not likely to see some bad things like this sort of idiotic NHI, National Health Insurance. It's beyond idiocy, actually, how moronic that is. And I can go into that, but we are not likely to see
I do want
anything.
to, so Leon, I do
Yeah.
want to go into NHI because I know that you were amongst the first commentators to come out with the 1 trillion rand cost for NHI. And again, if we don't have any money, it's a non-starter conversation, isn't it?
Well, it's worse than that. The Act does not say what health is. It doesn't say what health insurance is. It doesn't say what's intended. It's a bizarre piece of law. It's the biggest law in South African history. It affects every 6 million or so flesh and blood people in the country, legal and illegal. And it will be by far the biggest budget, bigger than anything ever dreamt of in history. Now, we came up with the 1 trillion rand estimate, and immediately everyone before us was saying 300 billion, 200 billion, up to 600 billion. When we pointed out that any reasonable calculation puts you at a trillion, we were actually understating. And then immediately after that, one of the medical aid said, well, actually, it's 1.3 trillion. And we've worked out, for example, what would happen if you had really good quality first world medical aid, healthcare for everybody. And you're not talking about 1 trillion or 2 trillion, you're talking about 7 trillion. In other words, the entire GDP if you mean by healthcare what everyone personally considers healthcare, most South Africans believe in traditional medicine and herbalism, and they are just excluded here. This is a Eurocentric, undemocratic conception of healthcare. And but if you include all of that, and you include the best quality, first world quality healthcare, you're talking about, our latest calculation is over 7 trillion. In other words, the entire GDP, the entire South African economy. So what does it mean, this national health insurance? It's meaningless. It's just rubbish. It doesn't say what the goals are. It doesn't even define health. It doesn't define healthcare. It doesn't say what will be done. And that's why Minister Gobengwana quite correctly said to Minister Motsoaledi, if you don't tell me what you intend doing, and you can't tell that by reading the act, it's weird. I don't know how Parliament can pass an act which it doesn't know what's to be done. Even the Ministry of Finance doesn't know what's to be done. The Minister of Health doesn't know what's to be done. And he says, give me a budget, but understand what that means. It's more serious than people realize. It means there is nothing in the act that anybody can make any sense of. It doesn't say what is to be done. Now, people all say, well, the minister says this, and Dr. Nicholas Crisp says that, and this is what the government says. But it doesn't matter what the government says, because what matters is in the act, and the act is a complete black hole of meaningless twaddle. Literally, it's unbelievable that you cannot tell from the act what it's going to cost, what's going to be done, to whom it's going to be done, for whom it's going. It's so ridiculous that the only thing you can do with it is repeal it in toto and go back to what we have right now, which, by the way, is universal health care. We already have it. We don't need this act. Everyone can go, as I've done, to a government hospital or clinic and get free service right now. And so when Nicholas Crisp, for example, who's the architect of it, is asked, why do we need it? He says, oh, well, he has to travel less than his gardener to get to healthcare. Well, is it about travel expenses then? Are we going to have a national health budget that has taxi fares? You know, it's crazy. It's beyond crazy. I cannot say enough about how crazy it is. It really is. If anyone reads it, they will have no idea what's intended whatsoever and in what way it would differ from what we've already got.
And you say the solution, repeal the act and stay with what we've already got, which is universal healthcare.
Yes, we stay with what we've got, where people who want to can buy their own healthcare. And, you know, for most people, by the way, I'm a Democrat and a non-racist, so I make the observation that for most people, that's traditional care and herbalism. It's not allopathic care, which we get at a Western, you know, neo-colonial hospital, let's say. The majority of people buy and pay for themselves for their own health care. The poorest of the poor, people living in shanty towns and recyclers pulling carts down the road, they buy their own health care, which is traditional care. And if the government believes in democracy at all, it would cover traditional care. I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm not a health person. I'm not expressing an opinion. I'm saying if you're in a democracy and you're a non-racial democracy, then you provide the health care that the majority of people want and the majority of people define as health care. And then, of course, probably in your circles, there are all the people who believe in alternative care and, you know, the homeopathy, et cetera, et cetera. And then there are people who believe in faith-based care, pay for that. And so this act does not tell you what it covers. It has now, you have no way of knowing other than by listening to the minister, and the minister doesn't tell us. So even when and it's irrelevant what the minister thinks, because he's got a short shelf life compared to an act.
I want to talk now about foreign policy and Cyril Ramaphosa's doubling down on his stance against Israel and further straining US-South Africa relations. What are your thoughts here?
I'm not a foreign policy person, and I try to stick to what I know, so I'll speak about foreign policy to the extent that I know it, and I'm not going to come into the whole Israeli-Hamas debate and that, President Ramaphosa's article is a diatribe against Israel. It's weird, actually, that somebody should, that a head of state at the southern tip of Africa should devote so much effort and passion and attention to attacking another country, but he has his reasons. But what I will point out is that by attacking the United States and belittling the United States and doing to the United States what Trump and J.D. Vance thought Zelensky was doing, what you do is you cost South Africa one hell of a lot of money, just bearing in mind that the foreign aid we get is not government-to-government aid. It's free. It must be health care aid, about 8 billion rand or so. And, you know, that's enough to have another 8,000 police. So literally, if you alienate the United States and they withdraw their health care aid, and then they withdraw other aid, the AGOA, African Growth and Opportunity Act, is not aid, it's just free access to the American economy. That's worth probably something like about 20 billion rand, about 200 billion rand to South Africa. And there you're talking about something like 200,000 RDP houses or thousands of new police. So, by the way, if you play recklessly with the U.S. and with Trump, you are increasing, and I want to put it bluntly, the number of people who are going to get raped because we will have less police. You know, that's the point. We will have more murder and rape and robbery as a consequence of having that amount of wealth less in the country. And you know, the loss of HIV/AIDS expenditure, we will have that much less. Now, you've got to think of that.
Well, on that point, Leon, I mean, we know that PEPFAR funding has been permanently cancelled, right? Permanently cancelled.
Yes.
So we've already seen consequences of foreign policy actions antagonizing the U.S.
And just, you know, I talk about economics and business and markets, but I want to point out that money means lives, people, flesh and blood. There will be more people dead by gruesome means. You know, we need to understand that numbers that people like you and I and BizNews talk about have a human flesh and blood dimension to them. And so every time you hear or read about some little girl being raped somewhere, say, thank you for alienating the United States. If you hear of people dying of HIV/AIDS, it's a gruesome, horrible thing to witness and to happen. Then you must understand that's the price that has been chosen to be paid by us in South Africa for what must be considered very reckless international relations, for whatever the political motives, which I don't understand or pretend to understand or know about, but I do know about the economics. And the economical consequences is death and gruesome suffering of HIV patients and lack of policing and lack of jobs and lack of homeless people living under bridges and in shacks where I work. By the way, that's where most of my work is in lowest income group communities. And these people are inspirational. They're wonderful. They're humbling at how they cope with their conditions. And all of them could have a house. You could literally have housing for every homeless South African with the money that is being wasted by this reckless international relations conduct.
Leon, let's go to the growth aspect of the economy and where to from here for South Africa. What is the solution that we need to advocate for implementation very quickly?
Okay, Bronwyn, it's very quick and very obvious. You look at the countries that prosper and succeed and you say, what do they do? And you emulate them. You copy them. China, India, Mauritius, Switzerland, you know, Singapore, the famous ones. What do? They have low government spending as a proportion of GDP, which is another way of saying you have an early tax freedom day. In other words, people work less for the government and more for themselves. They have markets. They have free markets. So China, for example, which in theory is run by the Communist Party, people don't understand that China's growth is almost exclusively in the special economic zones, the SEZs or SEZs as they would call them. And these are the freest economies on planet Earth. When they took over Hong Kong, instead of absorbing Hong Kong into the Chinese economy, they created six more Hong Kongs. And this is why it's the most prosperous high-growth country on Earth, copy them, do that, you see. So what you've got to do is lower our government spending, reduce the thing. You know, for example, all these old apartheid state-owned enterprises that we inherited, what are we doing with them? Why 30 years after apartheid do we have these apartheid dinosaurs around our necks? Get rid of them. Shut them down. And if there is something any of them really need to do, then outsource it or something. But the point is that they do nothing that needs doing. They did need doing during apartheid because of sanctions and isolation, but the utility is long since gone. Close them, liquidate them. I don't give them away, sell them. In fact, what I would do is very simple. I would give them to the existing management and employees for free, turn them into owners, and the unions should all celebrate and laugh all the way to the bank. That's point one. Point two is stop all the red tape that they got everywhere. You know, you drive past sometimes down the N1 and you see Alex on your right and Sandton on your left if you're going northwards. Okay. Now, when you look at Sandton, bear this in mind. Everything you see there is lawful, give or take. Okay. Every house is zoned, every rent is formal, every business has a license, every laborer is registered, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You look on the right side at Alex, and what do you see? Nothing is lawful. Everything is criminalized for lower-income group people or black South Africans. Verwoerd Ghost dances around the Thule house with a big smile on his face saying, if I knew the ANC would implement my policy, I'd have given them power long ago. The point is that in Alex, no business is licensed, no building plan, no building has a building plan, nothing is zoned. No laborer is registered. No taxes are properly paid, whatever. So you have 80% of South Africans, their daily, ordinary, everyday life is criminalized. Now, in fact, of course, the law is just not enforced. We just ignore it. We don't quite. All of them have to pay bribes to the police because the police and the inspectors have the right to shut and arrest everybody. And the way they carry on operating is bribery. So it's not consequenceless. So what we have to do is in the budget, he should say, we really will go to zero-based budgeting. He made some joke about it in his after non-budget comment, forgetting that it was actually the president who said we would have zero-based budgeting. And he suddenly says, no, it's a silly idea. Well, how can he? We need it. We need to go back and say, what do we really need the government for? What must it really do? A kind of Elon Musk sort of approach, but a South African version of it. Start by saying, everything created under apartheid, for apartheid, for white leafy suburbs, town planning schemes, building codes, zoning laws, survey laws, all of this stuff, scrap it or revise it to a level that is realistic for the majority of South Africans, that is consistent with how real people actually live, and not some kind of little Sandton and Constantia where a few wealthy black people now live and have no idea anymore what goes on for the majority of South Africans. You know, I would like to take them all to visit the Marathon and Delport, one of the poorest and biggest shanty towns in South Africa, which is in the mine dumps, and you see out of the windows you land or take off from our Tambo Airport. Wonderful people, a wonderful place. If you ever, you know, if you want to be inspired, you visit this place, and the government is its enemy. Literally, just think of this. Someone living in a tin shack right now in a shanty town, if they replace it with a brick building, they're not going to be moved. They're there permanently. They even bring in electricity and sewers and water and so on, if they can. Then their building is bulldozed down. In other words, it is a criminal offense to improve your living standards if you are poor. You may not do it. It's forbidden because you didn't have a building plan. So you have to live in a tin shack. And these laws are mad, wacky. Now, we need a budget where the Minister of Finance says, we're drawing a line in the sand. We are now going to adopt laws that are relevant, that are an abolition and a repeal of the legacy of apartheid, and that ordinary, everyday South Africans can start living lawfully, and that we can afford it, and we have growth and jobs, not of 0.5%. And when they say we expect 2%, well, that's rubbish, of course. Well, there's no reason you should if you don't change the policy. The policy has to be changed to less government spending, less government intervention, less government regulation, zero-based budgeting, abolition of the legacy of apartheid, freedom for all South Africans to improve their quality of life and live decently and buy whatever health care they personally believe in and want.
Leon Lowe, thank you so much for joining us here on Biz News. Leon Lowe from the Freedom Foundation.